From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made on a lawn along East Avenue, where passersby can hear voices. They are the voices of the dead. It is not a cemetery. It's a collection of live statues, local actors playing historical figures who you may not have read about in history books. This is the premise of the Flower City Rock Garden, a performance that's part of the Rochester Fringe Festival, hosted and curated by Rochester Contemporary Arts Center in partnership with Christ Church. The performance was created by theater professionals at Monroe Community College. The actors are from the college's drama troupe, and it's called On the Edge. And this hour, we're talking with the performance's creators and the actors about people who, you know, if you love local history, but you love learning about cool stuff and really interesting people and parts of our fabric, this is it. Anna Marie Douglas, Leah Fox Fish, Rattlesnake Pete. How much do you know about those names? How much do you know about their impact on Rochester and our history? Let's talk about it with our guests this hour. Kate Sweeney's co-creator of the Flower City Interactive Rock Garden and theater coordinator at MCC. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Evan. Nice to be here.
And Heather Chang, co-creator as well, theater professor at MCC. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
On the line with us is Anisha Stallworth, who is the actor who plays Anna Marie Douglas and a theater performance major at MCC. Welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Mariana Tonis. Did I get the last name right, too? Okay. See? Look at me. Mariana is an actor who plays Leah Fox Fish and a theater performance major at MCC. Welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. It's great to be here.
And Tom Abrams is an actor who plays Rattlesnake Pete and a theater performance major at MCC. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for being with us. And Kate Sweeney, how did this, where did this come from? What is the genesis of this?
The performance, the idea of it, Heather and I conceived it, honestly, because of COVID, with the restrictions being as they've been for the college. Unfortunately, last year we didn't get to meet a lot of our students in person. We only had a small percentage in person. Normally, in a normal year, we would rehearse our Fringe show all summer, and we really weren't sure what we had as far as students go, and we also wanted to give the new incoming students at MCC the opportunity to be able to participate in Fringe, since we were hoping we'd be able to be in person. So we decided to come up with a concept that would be able to be rehearsed in a three-week period from the beginning of the semester when we first meet the students to performing it live at the Fringe. Mm-hmm. And an odd conversation with Heather and I talking about mannequins and various other things.
I'm sorry, what?
We were talking about mannequins for the theater and statues, and it kind of led into this very nice flow of creativity between the two of us. Like, well, what if we had like statues? What if they came to life? We're like, right. You know, and then we were like, if they were animatronic, and we should have a button so that it would, you know, like it all just kind of, the two of us kind of went back and forth, and it all came together in that.
Wasn't there a movie called Mannequin?
Oh, yes, yes.
There was. Didn't it have like a Starship song, like a cheesy pop song?
Yes.
It probably did.
Your show is way better. And I haven't even seen it yet. I really like that concept. Can you add to that? What excited you the most about this?
Sure. In the past, for Fringe, we've tried to do some things that were kind of avant-garde, for recommended for more mature audiences and so forth. So as we were coming up with this idea, we thought, you know, let's do something that we haven't done before. Let's make it, you know, good for all ages. We decided to have the venue be outside, which is something we haven't done previously. And of course, you know, having it be outside, it was COVID safe, and it was also free. So, we decided to do all of those different, you know, combine all of those different elements. And then choosing the actual figures that we decided to have featured in the show, you know, there's always, you know, the steadfast, you know, people that we hear about all the time from Rochester, but we decided it would be fun to kind of choose some historical figures that people might not know about or, you know, realize, their legacy and what they've left behind and so forth.
I was out at Ellison Park this past weekend, and there was a really lovely Fringe-related performance on the history in this country of, among other things, mistreatment and dispossession regarding Indigenous people and their lands. And it was interesting. It was a wonderful crowd, but it was also just, it was entertaining to not only hear the history, but to then move throughout the park and see sort of different aspects of performance that we're also teaching. So at the core of it, though, it was really entertaining. It was interesting. So for you, Heather, how important is it to still just grab people and make them curious, make them interested, whether or not they're walking out with exactly the lesson you hope they're walking out?
Well, I mean, being a performing arts festival, of course, you want, you know, your production to be entertaining, certainly. As an educator, you know, through my experiences teaching, teaching is more or less entertainment, you know, for your students. It's how to make, you know, whatever subject material you're trying
to. Well, it depends on the teacher.
It does.
Very true.
It does. That's true. But you try to make your lessons engaging, you know, so that your students will retain that information and, you know, they'll understand it. And, you know, it's good when it's interactive and so forth. So I was trying to take, you know, my experiences as an educator and as a theater person, you know, and kind of combine those two ideas into this particular show.
And how do you feel about the choosing of historical figures? I mean, that's a task in itself right there.
Oh, it definitely was. And we went back and forth, and we have a much larger list if we ever wanted to expand on this idea. But we really tailored it to the students that auditioned to be part of this troupe and what would fit best for them and tell, you know, like them the stories. Heather and I, during our research, definitely went down some dark paths of Rochester history and had some other figures that, but it was really important to us to keep it for people that most Rochesterians don't know on a regular basis. From the inception of this project, we immediately said, like, we're like, no Freddie, no Sue. We all know a whole bunch. Like, we wanted it to be something like, oh, I never knew this person even existed or how they pertain to Rochester. And, or, you know, one of the first people that we picked was the Fox sisters. Mm-hmm. And because it's such an interesting story, everything about it is interesting. And that was like one of the tenements that we based all of the rest of the performances on was like, we both said that from the inception of this project. We were like, well, we're going to do the Fox sisters because mm-hmm. that's just such a great story of Rochester and something that we're oddly known for that was made up.
Right.
But they're real sisters is a real story. In fact, I was I lived in Rochester for a long time before I actually learned that story. I think I learned it on this program a number of years ago. And it was mind-blowing. It's such a good story. It's so fascinating. So the Fox sisters are one of the three kind of stories you want to tell. I want to know who didn't make the cut. Who was like the last one cut historical figures? Who's not in the show? That's impossible. That's a very hard thing to do.
Right. That would be a Heather question.
At least they're dead, right? You have to tell them,
no, sorry,
you didn't make it. There's no explanation. There's like no phone call.
Right.
Who didn't make the cut?
we went back and forth about having George Eastman, but then we figured...
kind of on the Freddie Sue kind of list.
Yes.
Most people knew.
Yes.
Yeah. Same with Margaret Woodberry Strong. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as Kate was saying, you know, one of the things that's great about this show is we can expand it, you know, so maybe later on,
absolutely,
you know, we could include those people as well.
So. Yeah. And to be clear, I mean, when I say everybody knows Eastman, I mean, people know roughly who they were. I'm sure there's a number of fascinating stories individually about all of these people, Frederick Douglass, Susan B. Anthony, George Eastman, and the list goes on. But what you're giving us is a chance to really connect with names that we may only know a little bit about or not at all. And I really appreciate that idea here. So let's work through that, and we're going to talk to the performers as well. I'll start right here in the studio with Kate and Heather, and then we'll talk to the performers about what they're trying to bring. And we're going to start with Anna Murray Douglas. So tell us a little bit about Anna Murray Douglas, and what was the conversation like on this particular historical figure?
Well, Anna Murray Douglas. Was the wife of Frederick Douglass. So, you know, Rochesterians, of course, know about Frederick Douglass and his legacy and the things he's accomplished in his lifetime. But, you know, I think that it was important to bring Anna's story to the forefront because he traveled quite often and she was left home, you know, to kind of not only tend to the family, but also help the people on the Underground Railroad. Their house was an important stop along the Underground Railroad, so people may not realize, you know, how integral Anna Murray was in you know, the in her abolitionist work as well.
And for her in particular, I think one of the most interesting facts, and something that I didn't know as a avid at-home armchair Rochester historian, was that she helped free Frederick Douglass from slavery. And that was such a, as we were doing the research and we were looking at everything, we were like, this is such an interesting thing. And Heather actually wrote all of the monologues that the performers perform. And so we took all of our research and put them in to something that would be conversational, so that it wasn't just a list of facts that they were reading. It was something of, if the character was describing themselves postmortem, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a really important person who I want to just stress. They often, someone like Anna Murray Douglas, gets the first thing you hear is, "Well, that was Frederick Douglass's wife." Not to minimize Anna Murray Douglas, but because as you share with us in show notes, and I'm sure your own research brings out, there's a whole lot less known about her and written about her and shared about Anna Murray Douglas, and mm-hmm. as so often happens throughout history.
Right.
But, you know, she's not just sort of a background person, a really important person. And let me ask the actor who plays Anna Murray Douglas, Anisha Stallworth, what did you know about Anna Murray Douglas before this process?
Personally, like you said, I just knew that she was Frederick Douglass's wife, which is sad to say, but like you said, they don't say much about her at all. I didn't know that she helped free him or that she did so much work to boost his career and him as a person.
What was, what is now this performance for you? I mean, is it educational for you? Do you feel the pressure of sort of getting it right for not only for the show, but for the public or for the historical figure? I mean, what are some of the things that you kind of are wrapped up in thinking about as you perform this character?
Something that really, really I want to get right is the strength and the courage behind, like, all these words that were put together. This short monologue about this character, that she had so much depth about her, and I wanted to portray that correctly, and her strength that she showed, not as a mother, not just as a mother, not just as a wife, but as a person in general. Like, she was a person as well, not just Frederick Douglass's wife.
On the subject of how Frederick Douglass was freed, this is all, to me, new information. I'm grateful to you for bringing this story to us, and to the actor for bringing this to us as part of the Rochester Fringe. But just reading some of this, by borrowing a freedman's protection certificate from a friend and wearing the disguise of a sailor sewn by Anna, Frederick made his way to New York City by train, possibly spending Anna's money to buy the ticket, according to a historian. And once there, he sent for Anna, and they were married in the home of abolitionist David Ruggles. There's so much texture here, even just reading what we do know about Anna Murray Douglas. I mean, how long is this performance? How many days is this performance?
The performance is an hour, but each of their monologues are anywhere between 5 and 7 minutes. It's a very short.
That's a lot of editing you got to do.
Yes. Heather did a great job with writing the pieces so that some of these points could come across, but it wasn't so much information that it would be able to, you know, like, get bogged down. And the interesting thing about this performance is you can listen to that story as many times as you want, because we have, they stand upon pedestals. Next to their pedestal is a button with their name on it. And just like, you know, going to a curated museum exhibit, you press the button and the speaker comes to life and tells the story.
5 to 7 minutes is a lot to cram in there. How do you feel about the decisions that were made in terms of what has been presented here?
I feel good about it. It was challenging, you know, to pick and choose, like, what specific, events in these people's lives were important to highlight. It was also challenging in writing the pieces. You know, there's a lot of information that's being given, and it needed to be conversational. I didn't want it to sound like a lecture, like a history lecture. I tried to add little quips in there, and I tried to make the language as conversational as possible, which you know, I think I like to think help the actors. They can speak for themselves, certainly, on their process. But, you know, the main thing was, you know, kind of twofold, to get the information and the facts out there, but to make it, as we said earlier, entertaining and conversational so that the audience doesn't feel lectured.
Rose O'Keefe is the author of Frederick and Anna Douglas in Rochester, New York. And Rose says Anna never got the credit she deserved. Said, quote, "They say she held the household together, but there was so much more to it than that. Anna would have been working constantly to manage their guests, keep the house clean, tend the garden, balance the varying opinions of her husband's colleagues without getting caught in the middle, and keeping their role on the Underground Railroad secret. It was a tough role, a very tough role." And after she died in 1882 after a series of strokes, you know, historians who have really uncovered her story the best say she was sort of left aside in history for a long time. So this is an important one. I think it's a really great choice. It's and I think people should really look forward to how Anisha's going to bring it to life, essentially. Anisha, what do you want people who press that button and get to experience that to go home and tell their friends and family about what they experienced?
Oh, wow. I hope that they go home and not only feel like they like learned something, but the fact that they kind of met her. Like, I want to be able to step into her shoes just for even like those 5 or 7 minutes and be able to bring to life her story and bring her to life, that she was not only like the strong, caring person, she was like a loving mother too. And all these emotions that every human has balled up inside of them, I hope I can just bring those to life for these people.
How's she do with it?
Oh, Anisha does an amazing job with it. And you can tell just we've had 2 out of our 3 performances thus far, and we've had great crowds for both of them. And Heather and I can absolutely see people go back. People go back to all these characters. You know, they might go through the garden 2 or 3 times with our 7 characters that we have in there. They'll stay and they'll go back and hear it again, and especially with Anisha and Mariana as well.
You want to add to that? What do you think of Anisha's performance?
Oh, I think she's doing an amazing job. You know, I think, all of the actors have done a tremendous job really bringing these characters to life. And I told them during one of our earlier rehearsals, you know, I was alone working on the scripts for so long. And I often questioned my writing and thinking, how is this going to sound? And it's way better than I could have ever imagined. I'm really happy with their performances.
And the last performance remaining is this coming Saturday at 6 p.m. That's at Roco, the side lawn there. It's at 137 East Avenue. No ticket required on this one. It's free. It's outdoors.
And you don't have to be there right at 6 p.m. You can come at 6:30 and still be able to experience the whole garden within that time period.
I would not be surprised, though, if you've got families going, you've got groups of friends, because as you say, you can kind of bounce around and hit the different performances, and then you might grab somebody and say, you've got it. You got to come. You got to hear Anna Marie Douglas' story. You got to come back and hear this. So the chance to do that is at 6 p.m. on Saturday. It's part of The Fringe, and The Fringe is back. It's happening right now. And this was just a fun chance for us to discuss history and not only the work that experienced people like Kate and Heather are bringing, but also history that a lot of Rochesterians should probably know or know a little bit more about. And that's why they're here. So let's turn to the next name on the list here. And the Fox sisters are, as we mentioned, is such a great story here. Leah Fox Fish is which of the sisters? See, I know generally the sister story. Everything from the thumping of the table to the scams that were perpetrated, the fascinating stuff about this. But why Leah Fox Fish?
I chose to highlight Leah because she's the oldest of the sisters, and she, you know, she knew what her younger sisters were doing, and she thought, this is a way to make money. So she was very crafty in that regard. So she persuaded them to, you know, to kind of, you know, see it as a business venture, if you will. So I like to think of her, you know, as kind of the mastermind behind
Very
it.
Savvy.
Yes, extremely savvy, especially during that time period. You know, the Fox sisters, you know, in their heyday were very They had a very profitable business. They were very wealthy.
They really got rolling in what, the mid-1800s, or was it later in the 1800s?
Mid-1800s,
yeah.
So as a woman at that time, to be independently wealthy was almost unheard of. So that's why I decided to kind of highlight Leah's story.
Practically against the law. We right. barely allow it now.
Exactly.
And Heather can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was Leah, too, who was one of the first ones to admit that it was kind of all a ruse.
So when we say it, let's back up. So for listeners going, wait, what were they doing? Who were these people? How did I not know about the Fox sisters? Go ahead. What was the scam?
Well, I mean, they're credited with creating the spiritualist movement, and they would do various things and seances, and you could talk to the dead and all of these different things. And, you know, once they got into their very older years, they finally did admit that they were doing it solely as a business venture, and that it was, you know, that, you know, they never really said that they didn't believe in it or anything else, but they did say that they created these things in order to, you know, make
right.
money.
Leah was interested in the occult to begin with. She did tarot card readings, palm readings, that kind of thing. But then her younger sisters, as a prank to their mother, actually started doing the rapping noises and things like that. So, you know, once they began to do that, that's when she decided, well, this is pretty entertaining. I bet we could, you know, have some people over and, you know, have them pay us to speak to their dead loved ones and so forth.
So when Heather talks about the rapping noises, that as I recall the story, and you can correct me, part of what they're trying to do when they are communing with the dead, they might say, all right, Kate, you know, I know you lost a beloved aunt, and that aunt is here with us, and we're going to be able to communicate. And it was, you know, and then through a series of some kind of signals, and sometimes it would be the, you would say, what is that? And sometimes I think it would be theaters full of people or group, you know, large groups of people, right, would come
right.
in and witness this and pay to see it and understand, try to understand what was happening. And it caught on for some people. People really believed what they were seeing and hearing and experiencing. I heard everything from the snap. One of them had a tendon that could snap over bone or something like that to make a loud snapping noise. I know it sounds very strange,
yes.
But they had different, I don't know exactly how much of that is apocryphal and how much of that is true, but they were creating some series of noises to do this. And I am not sitting here saying that all tarot card readers are scam artists. I'm not saying that all psychics are making it up. I understand many people really believe that they're communing, but it seems that the real story of the Fox sisters is they knew this was not communing with the dead.
Right.
They wouldn't try to tell you. They weren't like pathologically convinced of their own ability to speak to the dead. Right, Kate?
No, they didn't. You know, like they were interested in the occult. But, you know, like as Heather said, this began as a prank. And they were like, well, we can do this for other people, too. So it was a ruse from the beginning, like, you know, like from the get. And they just then took that and, you know, very entrepreneurially made it into their own business.
What does it say about us as a species that this became profitable?
I think it was the time period. It definitely.
They would be huge today.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, no, well, that was not the time.
That's true.
They would be bigger than ever today.
They would have much better tricks up their sleeve, too. but I, you know, like, I think that people want that. They want that connection. I mean, everyone wants that. In whatever your belief system is in anything, any sort of loss, or, you know, like, it's difficult. So you kind of, you're willing to get a little film over your eyes or, you know, because you want to believe it so much.
Sure.
Right.
And
sure.
They, you know, like ended up actually taking advantage of kind of people's, you know, like empathy towards what they were looking for out of people that they may have lost in their lives.
Sure, and in a moment we'll see what Mariana thinks about all this, but I am curious to know, Heather, if you think that there's any sort of moral gray area here, because I've heard people who, you know, I've got great friends who go to Lilydale and love it and really feel like they're benefiting from a lot from it and communing and learning about themselves. And then I've heard others say, you know, I go, and it probably is not real, but it makes me feel good and it makes me feel connected, because so much of what is actually communicated from people who claim to be able to commune with the dead can be really comforting and peaceful. They're rarely telling you, yeah, they're very disappointed in you, and they would prefer you not invoke their name anymore. I mean, that stuff doesn't usually happen. And so is there an argument that, hey, it might be a scam, but if it makes people feel good and deal with loss, is there a benefit here? What do you think?
I mean, I think, you know, helping people deal with grief and sorrow is a good thing. You know, I don't agree with making money off of it, however, but, you know.
That's where you draw the line.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be making money. Yeah.
But, you know, I think, you know, I mean, nobody should tell other people what to believe, right? So if people find comfort, you know, if it's helping them, you mm-hmm. know, through the grieving process, you know, it's not harming anybody, you know, I think it's fine.
Yeah, and, you know, truly with the Fox sisters, you have to at least admire the entrepreneurial spirit being in the 1850s or in the mid-1800s figuring out that this could work. I mean, they didn't even have cable news to advertise on. But here we are. So Mariana Tonas is an actor who plays Leah Fox Fish. And I should have asked. I know Mariana's doing Leah. Is it just Mariana's Leah or all three?
It's just okay. Mariana's.
Okay. Mariana, tell us about, you know, what you've learned about this person, this real person who did these fascinating things, and what you want to bring to this performance.
Well, I've lived in Rochester my entire life, and I'm ashamed to say I've never heard of any of them. And I noticed that when people were coming up to press the button and they saw her last name, like, I could hear other people being excited. The Fox Sisters, the Fox Sisters, the Cottage, the Fox Sisters, the Scam. And I was embarrassed because I knew little to nothing before I stepped into this character. But unlike Anisha, when she was like focusing on the strength and compassion and wanting people to leave inspired, I wanted people to leave scared. And I was focused on the attitude of Leah more than anything. And that's what I wanted to portray more than anything. Because she's definitely a very strong person, but she doesn't take crap from anybody. And I'd be scared of her.
How it all started, according to the Smithsonian. Oh, here it is, 1848. Just quoting from the Smithsonian. One of the greatest religious movements of the 19th century began in the bedroom of two young girls living in a farmhouse in Hydesville, New York. On a late March day in 1848, Maggie Fox, 14 years old, and Kate, her 11-year-old sister, waylaid a neighbor, eager to share an odd and frightening phenomenon. Every night around bedtime, they said, they heard a series of raps on the walls and furniture, raps that seemed to manifest with a peculiar, otherworldly intelligence. The neighbor, skeptical, came to see for herself, joining the girls in the small chamber they shared with their parents. While Maggie and Kate huddled together on their bed, their mother, Margaret, began the demonstration. "Now count five," she ordered, and the room shook with the sound of five heavy thuds. "Count 15," she commanded, and the mysterious presence obeyed. Next, she asked it to tell the neighbor's age. 33 distinct raps followed. "If you are an injured spirit," she continued, "manifest it by three raps." And it did. 1, 2, 3. Margaret Fox did not seem to consider the date, March 31st, April Fool's Eve, and the possibility that her daughters were frightened not by an unseen presence, but by the expected success of their prank. Amazing. It's just a story that is still kind of hard to get your head around. And Mariana, you say, you know, you grew up here, you didn't know much about this. What do you want people to kind of take away from what you're bringing to this performance?
I want people to admire this woman because even though she was totally pulling one over everyone's head, she still got away with it. And she was still smart enough and clever. And like, that was never something you saw of a woman during that time period. And even though she was hustling people, like, I think, you know, it's worth the appreciation of her efforts and the fact that she was so smart to do that. because I don't think anyone nowadays would be able to get away with that so easily.
Well, it was a year and a half later that they had their first paying gig doing this, and it was 40 years later that the, quote, signed confession came, in which it was essentially a here's how we did it, published in New York World in October of 1888. So a good 40-year run, and you'd think that all the spiritualists would go, huh, well, I guess this isn't real. But no, I mean, Kate Sweeney, that the enduring power of belief, even when you tell me that what I've been telling you for 40 years is all a scam, and I go, well, no, it isn't. That's powerful.
Well, it began a whole movement, and people took it to such a different extreme and to different levels. So I think in people's mind, once again, that film that you're willing to create of, like, you know, like that I don't need to see this, because they had the ability to, like, actually admit what they did. That's the most interesting part of the story for me, was that it's not just conjecture right now. We're not talking about it as any other spiritualist or psychic or any other, you know, like that style. We're not, you know, talking about it in that. They admitted that they were like, no, this was totally a scam, guys. Like, like, sorry, but thank you. Like,
exactly. And I mean, amazing, steadfast power to believe that that didn't snuff it out right there. This movement continued despite that. I guess I admire that about people, how much people will believe despite all of the evidence. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe I should be crestfallen that we as a society can't let go of certain things. I don't know. I really don't know. Maybe the real lesson here, Heather, is that if there are people who have the real gift of communing with the dead, and I'm going to leave the door open that maybe that's true. I think it would be the biggest news story in history if it was true. But let's say it's true that there are some people who have this skill. I would be looking at these sisters going, excuse me, you're going to make a mockery of what I'm doing here because I'm the one who can actually do it. I talked to my dead cat the other day. You know, I mean, I would think that that would actually denigrate the movement. But a lot of people don't seem to care. They just like to believe. I don't know.
Right. I think what's important to remember about the spiritualist movement is it is a form of religion. And, you know, a lot of times in religion, we are asked to have faith in things that we do not experience ourselves, things we do not see ourselves, and so forth. And, you know, so I think it's just another form of religion. And, you know, people have, you know, believe in you know, the teachings of spiritualism and so forth. And they have faith and they find comfort in, you know, following those beliefs.
How's Mariana do with this?
Phenomenal. she's great. One of the parts of the show, of course, is when the actors are not actively performing, they have to hold a pose until their button is pushed. And, you know, so I instructed them, you know, to find something that they're comfortable holding for a while in case, you know, the crowd wanes here and there. Mariana's pose is fantastic. She has kind of a creepy grin that she entices people over. She does a fantastic job.
Kate, you want to add to that?
Oh, yes. And it just happens to be how we ended up setting up the performance. Mariana could be one of the, depending on which entrance you come into to that garden, could be one of the first performers you find. And she definitely draws you in, even standing at a stationary pose. And throughout the entire performance, because they the idea is that they're statues, they are performing out to you, but not necessarily to you. Some of the actors don't necessarily directly look at you because it would, you know, the idea and the concept that Heather and I had was this kind of, like, you know, animatronics come to life.
Yes.
So we wanted that to ring through with the actors' performances. And, you know, all three of our seven actors that we have on today do an amazing job at bringing people in.
Mariana, that's high praise, that creepiness, that that pose that you've got to strike there. Is that what you're going for?
That was definitely the thing I worked on the most. I'll be honest. Like, I practiced creepy looks in the mirror until I freaked myself out.
Did you hear any rapping sounds when you were doing that, when you were looking in the mirror?
It's like honestly, like, I was getting in my head at one point because I started looking stuff up about her. And, like, when I would go to bed at night, I would leave a nightlight on because I felt that she was there and she wanted to be portrayed correctly.
Wow. That's powerful. And that is creepy, you know, but at least this is based on a true story and you can learn about the Fox sisters as part of the upcoming performance. The last performance during the Fringe is this Saturday, the 25th. This Saturday at 6 p.m. at the Rochester Contemporary Arts Center. It's their side lawn in the garden there at 137 East Avenue. Free, no ticket required. And we say 6 p.m., but anytime in that hour, you can get out there and consume any of the 7 performances that you please, because they're, what, 5 to 7 minutes or so? We've been talking about how hard it is to edit these fascinating stories down, but that gives you time to bounce around all 7 if you want. We're late for our only break. Should we do that? Let's take our only break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about Rattlesnake Pete next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on the next Connections, fiction about real people. When I say real people, the lead character in the book, The People We Keep, is not a real person, but Allison Larkin is a Rochester author winning national awards for her new book because it is supposed to be raw, real, painful, and what society is dealing with now. And we'll talk to her about her book Tuesday.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot, and it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and hope you're enjoying this walk through our history. Characters, big characters, interesting people, important contributions to local and frankly, history in general, but often stories that we don't fully know here. It's the Flower City Interactive Rock Garden. It's part of The Fringe, and the last performance is coming your way this Saturday. Kate Sweeney and Heather Chang are here. They are the co-creators of the Flower City Interactive Rock Garden, and we are meeting 3 of the performers. We've had a chance to talk about Anna Marie Douglas and Leah Foxfish, one of the Fox sisters. We're going to talk about Rattlesnake Pete in a minute here. You can go out there and experience Al Siegel, Cab Calloway, Maury Silver, H.H. Warner as well. And you might have seen Jeff Spivak, our colleague at Citi, writing and giving you a sense of just what you're going to experience there. Hard choices to narrow down the list here, and then to edit down these stories for about 5 to 7 minutes for performers who will stand like a statue, really more like a weird, creepy animatronic statue that you can press a button and they come to life. And there they are, embodying this character that maybe you didn't know much about Anna Marie Douglas, and now you will. Or Leah Foxfish, as you just heard from Mariana. Or Rattlesnake Pete. And I've always wanted to get to know a real snake oil salesman. Kate, let me start with you. Tell me a little bit about Rattlesnake Pete.
Well, actually, for Rattlesnake Pete, I would say that out of the characters, that is the least that I know. Tom, our actor, he ended up doing a good chunk of the research, and him and Heather worked a lot together to do it. It was a character that I had heard of from Rochester, I mean, an actual person that I had heard of from Rochester, but I knew very little about his story before we started.
Okay.
I, in doing my early research, I came across this. He was actually one of the first people I came across, and I thought, well, I have to include Rattlesnake Pete for sure. He was just a very charismatic person who had a lot of different interests and a lot of different talents, I think. And, you know, he was just quite a character and but seemed to be well-liked by everybody. So, you know, I felt like he definitely needed to be part of the show. And, you know, when I cast Tom, Tom took it upon himself to do some character research, so he could probably tell you a lot more, you know, than what's just in the monologue, because I know he did his own research as well.
All right, Tom, what did you learn about this guy?
Okay, well, before I was cast, I didn't know anything about him, hadn't heard about him. Then, you know, I saw that, and I was like, oh, I hope that I got that part, and then I was like, yes, I did. So I looked him up. And one of the things that I learned, because I was working on doing the monologue and the movements, and I found out that he was actually left-handed, so I had to switch it up because I'm right-handed.
It's very, very specific to the character.
Oh, yeah, very specific to the character. And he invented the Nickelodeon piano. You put a nickel in and it plays piano, plays music automatically. He created the first Nickelodeon piano in America. And wow. Even though he was a snake oil salesman, he absolutely believed in what he was selling. Absolutely believed in it.
This is where he departs from the Fox sisters then. He actually believed what he was selling, you're saying.
He believed what he was selling. He believed what he was selling so much that if people couldn't pay for his cures, he actually just gave them to them for free.
Okay. that's hard to believe, that you could believe that this is a real thing, because snake oil is, I mean, I don't even know, what is snake oil?
Well,
yeah, go ahead, Tom.
It's, I mean, how do you make anti-venom? You use the venom of the snake. And, you know, he had been taught by Native Americans that the skin of the snake also has healing properties.
Okay.
And so he believed, he believed that, he sold that idea, and people believed it enough that it worked. Placebo effect.
Placebo. That's the thing that's amazing about this. So he believed it could work. Snake oil could work. To do what, by the way, Tom? What are we doing with the snake oil?
Well, he used it for a whole bunch of stuff, especially goiters. He used it to help cure goiters. That was what he dealt with the most. But for the most part, he dealt with getting people through being poisoned by snakes. he believed that in order to get the poison out of their system, they needed to drink a bunch of milk. And for some reason, it worked for him. It, you know, like, it's not a real thing, but he believed it enough that it worked. Because the human mind is an amazing thing.
Boy, it sure is. So it was a Goiterade. And then it was used for other healing properties. Interesting.
He would sometimes also use the actual snakes themselves. you know, he might wrap the snake. There's a photo of him behind a woman who's seated, and she has a snake wrapped around her neck, apparently curing a goiter in that case as well. So.
But part of the problem, I mean, from my brief read of the history here, Heather, is, you know, I know that, from what I've read, in Chinese medicine, there's a belief that snake oil can be helpful. The problem is, as so often happens, you can appropriate this and make it sort of cartoonish or caricaturized. And, you know, so it's hard for me to see the line between where Eastern medicine and legitimate, honest approach is one thing versus someone who is, apparently Rattlesnake Pete was not a scam artist, even though the modern term snake oil salesman denotes scam artists. But for people who did sell snake oil just to try to scam the public, that's very different than what is happening maybe in Eastern medicine, I would think.
I think so, too. I know that in the monologue, you know, in the beginning part of the monologue, Tom talks about, you know, where Rattlesnake Pete got his knowledge from. And he grew up and would often visit the Native Americans who lived nearby, and you know, they taught him the importance of using the entire animal and all of the different properties that this animal, you know, held and so forth. And, you know, it worked for them. And, he grew up believing that and so forth. So, again, I don't think, you know, he didn't see it as a scam. He saw it as truly helping people.
Yeah. And so I guess if that knowledge comes from Eastern medicine or, as you say, indigenous peoples here, Tom, did you get the sense that this was a sincere character, that that he was truly trying to do something beneficial here?
Oh, absolutely. And at the same time, I also saw him as a scam artist, because he was both of those things.
Boy.
He was absolutely both of those things. The reason why people gravitated to him was because of his large personality, which is what scam artists have. So, you know, like, I wanted to get across his boisterousness. You know, he's rambunctious. He's loud. He's personable. People like him, and so people believe him. And he believes it himself, but the fact that he believes it doesn't mean he's not scamming people.
Fascinating. How does Tom do in the portrayal here?
Fantastic. He does a great job. You know, he definitely has the presence and the projection and the personality to really draw people over to hear his story.
What do you think, Kate?
Oh, he does an amazing job, and he draws you right in from the beginning, even to the point of he is definitely the most boisterous, and, you know, where some of the parts, such as Anna Marie, a quieter voice is really needed to be able to tell her story, and he's a snake oil salesman from the second you push that button, and you know it even before you know his story. He's out there. He's charismatic. He's definitely showcasing one of the odder characters in Rochester history.
Michael writes to say, my grandfather knew Rattlesnake Pete. He used to hang out at his saloon on Front Street in Rochester. Arch Merrill wrote that Front Street was the toughest street between New York City and Chicago. Pete learned from the Seneca how to use rattlesnake venom as a cure. His saloon was also a museum. Arch Merrill wrote a great piece about him on one of his 24 books about local history. Wow. Here's another one. How much do people actually know about snake oil being sold in Rochester and Rattlesnake Pete? Really cool stuff. Tom, as you say, you want people to kind of feel that boisterousness, that larger-than-life kind of character. Do you want them to be sort of confused about him, whether they like him or don't like him? I mean, like, does that matter to you as a performer, how they walk away feeling about him?
Oh, what I want to get across the most, you know, that boisterousness, but also just his absolute excitable curiosity. So I kind of do want people to be more like, yes, this is what an interesting character, you know, like not necessarily, oh, I agree with what he was saying, but he was just so full of curiosity that, that is what I want to get across.
Well, I mean, throughout history, some of the most successful people have been some of the biggest personalities that they are so confident in what they are selling you. And sometimes it's selling you, but sometimes it's selling an idea. They're so confident that you end up believing them if they are just charismatic enough. The good news is we've gotten over that as a society and we don't get conned anymore.
It's true.
We don't get conned anymore. This just never happens.
And we do hear...
That's the biggest joke I've ever heard.
We do hear throughout the course of all the characters, including Rattlesnake Pete, their kind of end story, too. This isn't just the sale pitch as for the Fox sisters or for Rattlesnake Pete. We hear what kind of was the end of their saga, too, what their death was and, you know, like how they died.
Yeah, it's tough for the Fox sisters. A lot of alcoholism and...
And for Rattlesnake Pete as well.
For Rattlesnake Pete. Interesting. And before we lose the hour here, you want to just mention briefly some of the characters that we don't have on the show today, but the characters that you can meet on Saturday in the 6 o'clock hour?
Sure. So we also feature Maury Silver, of course, who is responsible for keeping the Red Wings in Rochester. H.H. Warner, who actually is another businessman who is known for being on the first Chamber of Commerce here in the city. Cab Calloway, renowned musician. And then Al Siegel is the other featured person who started the first blood bank registry, blood donation registry here in Rochester, and of course grew from there his various centers for helping people.
Yep, the Al Siegel community of agencies continues to do such important work. Maury Silver owned the highest grossing music store in the country. We all know Silver from Silver Stadium, but what a great story there.
No, right on South Clinton Avenue.
Yes.
Amazing things that you didn't know about Maury Silver. What do you appreciate about the Cab Calloway story the most?
I think, you know, Cab Calloway, you know, is obviously a very renowned musician. And I think his story, you know, people may not realize, although he didn't live here his entire life, you know, he is from here. And, you know, he was famous for, you know, of course, his scat style of singing. He also, you know, created the Jitterbug. He's just such a charismatic performer. And I thought it was certainly, you know, he was certainly an important figure to highlight as well.
And Jeff writes, you know, this is the Cab Calloway that we know from the Minnie the Moocher years, mm-hmm. resplendent in a white tuxedo.
Yes.
We talk about a larger-than-life character there, too. Great stuff. And H.H. Warner, what stands out about H.H. Warner to both of you?
Okay. Well, H.H. Warner, I think it was important for both Heather and I to highlight because it kind of fell into that category of like famous Rochesterians to where they had this huge uprising, but then a seeming fall, you know, like his story doesn't end quite as well as you would think, but it started and he was an integral part on what business, the commerce and things in Rochester are today, but you know, eventually making a whole bunch of poor business decisions led him down a path of being destitute towards the end of his life.
Mm. Wiser person than me once said that eventually all graves go unattended. And that is true for the vast majority of anyone who is ever born and will eventually die, even the biggest names. The amazing thing about this sort of a show is that these are people who were huge in their times. And now it takes a wonderful interactive performance like this to bring them back to life and help us kind of get hold of our own history, because even their graves go unattended. Anna Murray Douglas and Rattlesnake Pete and so many more. Well, some of them more recently. I mean, we're familiar with Maurice Silver, but there's so much of the stories that we don't know. And I just appreciate what both of you have done with this, and certainly the performers. And I want to thank the performers for being with us. Have a great, great time. I hope all three of you are going to have fun this weekend. Tom Abrams, who plays Rattlesnake Pete. Thank you, Tom. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Mariana Tonas, who plays Leah Fox Fish. Enjoy creeping them out, Mariana. Great work with that. Thank you.
I surely will.
Anisha Stallworth plays Anna Murray Douglas. Hugely important person that we all should know more about, because certainly we know Frederick Douglass. Thanks for the work and thanks for the storytelling this hour, Anisha.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And you're going to see Anisha, Mariana, Tom, and more this weekend, Saturday, 6 p.m. out at Roco, the side lawn there in the garden at 137 East Avenue. It's a free performance, no ticket required, anytime in that 6 o'clock hour. Kate Sweeney, Heather Chang, congratulations on that. Wonderful stuff. Thanks for being with us this hour.
Thanks for having us.
It's all part of the Rochester Fringe Festival, which is going on this week. Great week for that. Megan Mack, Julie Williams, Evan Dawson saying thanks for listening. We're back with you tomorrow.